Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keys are here with you, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We will have Bruce Feldman from The Athletic with us later in the show at 8:30. We'll get into the quarterbacks, some of the conversations he had at the NFL Combine a little bit later. Joe, real quickly, speaking of the NFL Combine, our friend Dayton Brugler has come out with his post-Combine mock draft, and we're getting close to the time of year, as you mentioned yesterday on the show, where the Beast comes out and he goes in-depth on all these prospects. It is interesting to just kind of look at this mock draft. I won't read the whole thing and give the whole thing away, obviously, but he does project a trade that the Titans make at number one overall with the Giants. And I want to get your thoughts on the last part of this. He says, this is the only trade I'm projecting in this mock. Probably be the least surprising move if it comes to fruition. Packaging a pair of day two picks to move up from number three to number one likely will be enough to put Cam Ward in a Giants jersey. What do you make of the idea of the Giants moving up, and what's the price, if you're the Titans, that you're comfortable with moving from one to three at that point?
Yeah, it's interesting. He said a couple of day two picks.
He did.
Along with obviously trading one and three. Man, I'd want more than that. I would want more than that. I mean, I'd love to, you know, is it possible to get their first next year? Is that being too greedy?
You could start there with a conversation, for sure.
Yeah, like that's what I would be because especially you think about that. I mean, the Giants absolutely have a great chance of sucking this year, no matter what they do at quarterback. So, you know, that could be a real nice pick. You know, that and like, can you get, you know, get their second and get like next year's one? I mean, that's what I would. So second day picks now.
And that could be a second round pick. So I mean, there's value in that.
That's second or third though, right?
Correct.
That's second or third. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, if you get their second, you get their third. Oh man, that may end up being it. You know, two space jump, and you know, by the time you get to this trade being made, the Titans may have signed Sam Darnold to be their quarterback. And so, you know, like obviously teams are less worried that the Titans are actually going to take their guy,
yeah,
take the quarterback. I'd like a little more than that if possible.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, you know, is it a second and third round pick, what you're looking at that point? You know, how popular is the idea of moving up to number one? Are the Giants the only team that wants to move up to number one? Because if so, Joe, I mean, that affects the price. Like, do the Raiders get involved in trying to move up the number one? You know, another thing that Brugler talks about here, which is right in line with some other things we've discussed on the show today, which is, you know, Ward is pretty firmly entrenched, and Shedeur Sanders did not help himself at the combine. That's what Brugler talks about here, and says, you know, some teams believe that Sanders is QB2 in this draft, while other teams view him as more of a day two type of prospect. So it is going to be really interesting to see like how people view the Sanders part of this, but how many people after the film, after the combine, after meetings before the draft, just like fall in love with Cam Ward and want to move heaven and earth to get up to a position where they can draft him.
Yeah, I mean, he's clear it could be one. Now remember, you know, it's not that Shedeur didn't help himself; it's that he was always a fake prospect, according to Stilley.
Okay.
And this is just media finally being told by the football people is not good, that he's not good. Because, you know, the only time media people can talk to the football people is when they're all in Indy together. They don't have their phone numbers or ever call or text them. It's just when they're in the same city, then all of a sudden the texts go through, I guess. But, yeah, just a very interesting train of thought there. But, yeah, look. We talked about it earlier with Shedeur. Is he, you know, is this misinformation? Is it people trying to throw people off the trail, or did he really like screw up some interviews? I mean, clearly some people are saying he screwed up some interviews. But Cam is the top prospect. And you just need, you need the Giants. I mean, that to me is the best scenario, because then you can get one of those top guys. You need them to absolutely be bought in on him and feel like they can't go without him. And just like the Titans are going through this free agency period, the Giants are too, right? I mean,
yep.
Maybe Aaron Rodgers pulls a, makes them hallucinate and thinks that they should, put something in their coffee and they want to sign him. I mean, it's possible the Giants do something else, but it seems like if you're the Giants, you would think, that you got a real chance here to get this if you like him that much. And you're paying really close attention to, do the Titans legitimately like him a lot? I think the Titans want people to think that. Are the Titans actually warming up so much to Cam Ward that they might be like, screw it, man, we're just going to take this guy?
Let's head back to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Chad in Hendersonville. Chad, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, thank you, guys. Good morning. I got a question on your opinion on this Darnold thing. I guess the thing that's confusing to me is that Minnesota is going to let him go to free agent. And then as I kind of try to peel the onion back, my question is it potentially Darnold's camp that is forcing this free agent, that basically saying, I don't want to go on a trade, and anybody that's going to try to negotiate with me, we're going to basically put our hand up because we really want this thing to go to free agent. I mean, what kept Minnesota from not being able to get even a day two pick for him?
Yep. Thanks for the call, Chad. It's a good question. We threw that idea out there earlier of, is this as simple as Minnesota, quote unquote, trying to do right by their guy and letting him get to free agency? Because to me, Joe, there's still this conversation that's attached to Sam Darnold not having a franchise tag put on him. And everybody that's put that out there, I saw Rappaport put it out there last night, Russini's put it out there of like, they're still going to try to get a deal done with him. It's like, okay, well, what kind of deal are they trying to get done with him, right? Like, are you signing Sam Darnold to a three-year deal and paying him the type of money that other teams likely will pay him if he gets to the market? I got a tough time believing that when you've got J.J. McCarthy waiting in the wings. So this tells me, this is a signal to me, that Minnesota is going with McCarthy, and they think McCarthy's ready to be their starting quarterback next year. Now, as far as why they didn't tag Darnold and try to get something for him, that's a question that I would have as well if I'm a Minnesota fan, Joe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a totally fair question. And, I think for people looking at Darnold, it's like, does all of this say more about Darnold or more about McCarthy? Like, if I'm the Vikings, I would like the comfort of, hey, you know what? Yeah, JJ looks great, and we think he's so good that he's going to take the job. But in the meantime, do you have to put everything on him right away this year when he is, less than a year removed from an ACL? Or, he'll be a year removed when the season starts, or right before the season starts. Do you want to put everything on him? Do you believe in him that much? They haven't even been able to watch him like play in the last several months. Obviously, he was very impressive in the preseason. And I think, as you saw, the Michigan's run, I mean, he's a tremendous talent. There's no doubt. But it still seems like that's a bit of a stretch. So is this a little bit of a red flag? Like, there's a little bit of Darnold got propped up more than maybe you think last year.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll have more on the Titans and their draft process coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Tune in later today to 94.9 The Fan for Vanderbilt baseball as the Commodores host Evansville. Pregame beginning at 4:15, first pitch at 4:30. Coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at thegamenashville.com. Bruce Feldman from The Athletic will join us coming up at 8:30. Looking forward to that. Right now, taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Joe, we went through the piece from Albert Breer from SI.com earlier in the show, kind of highlighting the history of Brian Callahan, Mike Borgonzi, their drafts having the number one overall pick, and how that could influence what the Titans do moving forward. Now, in Callahan's case, it was Joe Burrow, and they knew pretty early in that process that Joe Burrow was going to be their number one overall pick. Borgonzi was with the Chiefs when they had the number one overall pick, and there were some quarterbacks available that they chose to pass on. They traded for Alex Smith that offseason. They drafted Eric Fisher at number one, the tackle, and away from there they went. So they've done it in different ways. You know, how teams in different situations have handled the number one overall pick in years past, not necessarily an indicator of what the Titans are going to do here this year. But it was interesting from Albert Breer to get kind of some thoughts behind the scenes from Borgonzi and Callahan, and particularly from Borgonzi talking about, like, if you're drafting somebody that high, they better have some rare elite physical abilities. And he did not want to get too much into the quarterbacks when it came to those discussions, but did not have any problem naming Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter.
Yeah, yeah, that was interesting. Also, seems to me like, you know, Brian Callahan, and he's pretty involved in the process. I don't know, it could be crazy. There was a time period of the day where he's not with those guys, so I guess that's a big deal. But I also enjoyed the fact that Callahan and Borgonzi have both, like, keywords that start with the letter C. That seemed to be an exciting point there for them. What are the words, like, connected, command, chemistry,
communication?
Yes. Communication.
Sure.
You know, so they like to see words. So there you go. Got that. Got that shared vision. Now, it was interesting. Certainly, the two different ways of going about, you know, the similar situations, and, you know, and the examples given there, both of them worked, you know, eventually. Now, you know, with Kansas City, you go back to that draft where they decided, you know, like, they didn't like the quarterbacks at the top of the draft, and so they, you know, they went and they traded for Alex Smith. I mean, I think there was a lot of, you know, I'd imagine that Kansas City sports radio wasn't very favorable toward that at the time. Of course, no one could know that then, and they would go out with Alex Smith now, good quarterback, you know, playoff team, consistently winning, go out and draft this kid out of Texas Tech, the system quarterback. You know, what was the reaction to that at the time, too, by the way? But it worked out great, and, of course, it was a lot simpler for Callahan's path with Joe Burrow just blowing the room away. I mean, it sounds like Cam Ward is – acquitting himself well. It sounds like he's doing a better job of helping himself in these rooms than Shedeur Sanders, but how much better?
So, Joe, an update on the quarterback situation as we sit here today at 8:20 on March the 4th. Sam Darnold looks like he's going to be out there and available. We've talked about the options with Cousins and Rodgers and those type of guys. Well, Ian Rappaport just went on the NFL Network, and he was talking about the Steelers, who continue to be one of the most fascinating teams to me in terms of what they're going to do at quarterback. And what Rappaport said was that, based on people he's talked to, and he did say that some of them were Steelers executives, that one of Russell Wilson or Justin Fields is probably going to be their quarterback next year. And based on conversations that he's had, it looks like Justin Fields is going to be the favorite to be the starting quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers next season, Joe. So when you hear that, what do you think of that? If that's the way that Pittsburgh goes, do you think that's the right decision here? And what does that kind of tell you about the quarterback market if Pittsburgh is electing to, I guess, potentially bring back Justin Fields as their starting quarterback?
I guess maybe it means that Mike Tomlin and I are a little bit on the same page. But, I mean, if I'm a Steelers fan, I'm not excited about that. And I just don't see how that is going to do enough for you if you're the Steelers and in the division they're in. With their defense clearly, you know, taking some backward steps a little bit here, there's got to be, with that, there has to be a rookie in addition, right? Somewhere in here?
I would think. I mean, I don't know how you could go into next year saying Justin Fields is our guy. Like, he's unquestionably the starting quarterback all year.
Like, I don't have a problem picking him over Russ, as long as then you have another
option,
you know, maybe they're looking to trade up. Maybe they think Shedeur will fall. Maybe they think they like Tyler Shough, whatever, you know, Milrow. I don't know. Jackson Dart. You know, apparently Jackson Dart helped himself in Indy. I don't know, but that can't be exciting for Steelers fans. It's good to me. It's good for the Titans if they want Darnold. You know, if they want Darnold, if they're not interested in getting into that mix. Because if I'm Darnold, I'd probably be most just in terms of like, yeah, most players, right? Don't they look at the Steelers and say that's a stable, winning organization?
Sure. Yeah.
That you'd like to be a part of. Did you see this text from Jeff? I have not seen this anywhere, so I don't know, but he's claiming that he read that the Niners might trade Purdy to the Titans for number one. And he says print media says they'll likely be on the market. I have not seen that. So I have not discussed it, Jeff, because I have not seen that anywhere.
I've seen the exact opposite of that. That they're working like mad to get an extension done with Purdy.
I think somebody may have thrown the eye like a you know how it is this time of year. Like, hey, could the 49ers throw Purdy in there and try to go get the number one overall pick? But I've not seen anything credible to, like, the Niners trying to get rid of him.
Yeah. So
their public comments have been the exact opposite of that.
Send me a link, Jeff.
Yeah, I would not say that that one is probably on the scope of reality there. The Fields thing's interesting. You know, you bring up Shadur. Well, I brought up the Brugler mock draft. That's exactly where he's got Shadur going, is 21 okay. to Pittsburgh. So that's a pretty precipitous fall from Sanders in terms of how this was a few weeks ago with a lot of these mock drafts. And again, you know, it's a mock draft, so it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the way it's going to play out. But, yeah, Brugler does have Shadur falling all the way to 21 to Pittsburgh.
Well, falling? I mean, he's a TV prospect. How could a team want to take him in the first round? Is he? I thought he was going to be a UDFA.
Maybe
so. Steelers are making a huge reach there. If Shadur is going to go in the first round, my goodness. They must really love Stephen A. Smith's commentary.
I'm interested to see if it shakes out that way. Like, to me, though, whether it's Shadur or someone else, like, if your plan is Justin Fields to be your starting quarterback next year, that has to be in tandem with you drafting another quarterback. I don't really see how it couldn't be.
Yeah, and if not, like Steelers fans, I mean, I'm going to need to check with Junie, see if he's okay.
Yeah.
Junie wellness check on Justin Fields. Yeah, look, I still have this glimmer of hope for Justin Fields because this is one of my draft takes. Like, Justin Fields is going to be amazing in the NFL. The Bears draft, I'm like, oh, my God, the Bears actually did something smart. Didn't work out. I still have this glimmer of hope that take from long ago now can end up looking good and that he'll put it all together. There are times I watch him play, I'm like, man, there's just so much there. But I don't know. I mean, they it's weird because they move on from him. They're winning, but they're not doing much on offense. They move on from him. Russ is better. Then at the end, Russ turns into a pumpkin. But it's just surprising, I guess, that it would be shocking if they're like, oh, all day it's just going back to Justin Fields and he's the guy.
By the way, just a quick thing to point out on the Brugler mock draft front before we get to Bruce Feldman. A notable omission from the first round of the NFL draft and his latest mock draft. No James Pierce Jr. in the first round.
Really interesting. Yeah. There was some, you know, maybe we can even ask Bruce about this, but there was some talk about just, what I read, attitude would be the thing. So it's not like it's some, you know, something he did that was hidden or something off the field, but attitude, I guess, would be. But my goodness, man, how bad he's a first round player. Like, how bad of an attitude are we talking about?
Yeah. I am not going on the field. I'm not doing it.
I hate you, Josh Heupel.
I don't know. It's enough to not have him in the
first
round. I
smoke weed constantly.
Enough to not have him in the first round of Brugler's mock draft. We'll have Bruce Feldman from The Athletic joining us coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. We head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Bruce Feldman, who does an outstanding job for The Athletic. Bruce, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning, guys. Good to be on with you.
Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. So, Bruce, it's interesting. You know, a lot of conversation around here about quarterbacks for the Titans, which we'll get to in just a second. But, you know, the NFL Network put it out there that this is the fastest group of offensive linemen that the scouting combine has ever had. Titans have needed offensive linemen for what feels like forever at this point. So based on what you heard at the combine and some of the conversations you've had, how do you view this year's crop of offensive linemen in the draft?
You know, I think it's better than probably people were making it out to be. There's obviously a lot of talk about the D-line group and this year, but I think you have some guys. I mean, there's some big athletic guys who I think tested better than a lot of people expected they would. So I think there'll be a bunch of guys probably in the middle of the first round that will be there that I think you'll see a run on that's pretty impressive. Obviously, we know this is not, compared to last year, a very good quarterback crop. I think that is a very underwhelming group. But on the O-line side, the running back side, the tight end side, I think it's a really good draft, you know, at least from that piece. It's just because you don't have the star power and the franchise quarterbacks there, I think a lot of people are just kind of underwhelmed by this group overall.
So speaking of those quarterbacks, Bruce, and I you know, saw in your report here, you know, that you know, there are other guys who are possibly moving up. Jackson Dart, you know, Quinn Ewers threw the ball well, but obviously around here everybody is concerned about, do the Titans take someone at one? It seems like the consensus is that Cam Ward has distanced himself, has helped himself. More people like him. You talked to people, more people just thought there was a gap between Ward and Shedeur Sanders. There's also some talk out there about Sanders, I guess, not helping himself, you know, in the interviews. I mean, what have you heard just about, like, you know, that aspect of this for Shedeur Sanders?
Yeah, there was one coordinator I talked to who had, you know, his team met with Shedeur, and he said he thought he was sharp. And, you know, I don't know if he turned off that many people. I just think, you know, people are coming in probably going, all right, if we draft Shedeur, does it turn into a little bit of a circus? Because there was just so much of a social media push around him, you know, there's constant, just because of what his father's college football program was like. So I think there's probably been some biases when he walks in the room for some people. But from a physical talent standpoint, all the NFL people I talked to who had a strong opinion one way or the other liked Cam Ward more than Shedeur Sanders. I think one thing that probably didn't help Shedeur is, you know, people love that he played in the bowl game, in the Alamo Bowl against BYU. He just played really badly in it. And I think there was some stuff on film that, you know, some of the people who I talked to were like, oof, you know, we saw the, you know, him getting run down and retreating in the game against BYU. It was not a good night for him. And I think that was the last impression people had from him from film. There's still some plenty of good things on tape that people see. But, you know, look, I think it's pretty rare for a guy who could be drafted in the top 15 where they don't have, as a quarterback, where they don't have some perceptions. And there's certainly some of that with Caleb Williams last year, you know, at the top of the draft. And I think there feels like there's always a quarterback who, you know, this kind of chatter ends up getting out there. Again, the people I talked to didn't have a problem with how Shedeur came across in the meetings. It was more of like, they just like Cam Ward better because they think he's just a more talented quarterback.
So Bruce, sticking with the quarterbacks there, it's a fairly common occurrence that, you know, sometimes quarterbacks in the draft get taken in the first round, maybe more often, maybe a greater number of them than we think heading into a draft. So as you look at this year's draft, is there another quarterback beyond Sanders and Ward that you think could get into the first round? Is there more than one? How do you view that part of it heading into the draft?
I think the one guy who might sneak in somewhere would be Jackson Dart from Ole Miss. People love his toughness. He threw the ball pretty well in the workout on Saturday. Looked very comfortable. I think there's a bunch of people who I talk to like his temperament. There's, you know, there's mixed with him. There's other stuff where I think people are like, you know, there's a lot of inconsistency there. over a lot of time in his career, also like Cam Ward, there were big turnover issues. But I think people think he has at least a chance to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. Tyler Shuck is really talented. He runs really well. He has really good size, really strong arm. And I don't know if this is a big knock. It's definitely a talking point around the draft world is that he's going to be 26. But I think as much as anything else is that he has an injury history, but he's definitely a guy that people think has the talent to be a starting quarterback. Those would be the two guys who I think, you know, somebody could fall for and end up maybe moving back up into the first round to take him if you really, really need a quarterback. Again, I think Cam Ward will be a guy who will go in the top five. Maybe Shador goes there. It depends. But then this is such a weak quarterback crop. I think people could talk themselves into the other two guys who generated some genuinely good buzz with what people saw from them in Indy.
So, Bruce, you wrote about James Pierce, obviously high interest around here from Tennessee. And then Texas A&M, Shamar Stewart, both testing extremely well. You know, Stewart has not had the production. Pierce had production, but as you wrote, you know, maturity. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, why is James Pierce falling down draft boards? I think our colleague Dane Brewer doesn't have him in the first round, his latest mock. What did you hear on that front, and how would you compare those two in terms of their NFL potential?
Yeah, the similarities is they're tall, long guys who are really explosive. Pierce has better film. Stewart probably, you know, people wonder where's the production. I mean, for a guy, he's more than 20 pounds bigger than James Pierce, and he is vertical jumping 40 inches and broad jumping almost 11 feet. I mean, those are insane numbers. He ran really well too, but 4.5 sacks over 37 games. You know, I talked to multiple D-line coaches, and that came up a bunch where, yes, he's disruptive, but you still need him to make plays. With Pierce, there again, maturity was putting it probably kindly in some of the chatter you have with people in Indy. That it was just some stuff where I don't think he was getting the highest. You know, there were some character concerns to put it mildly there. But he's a really good player. He's very talented, and I think that especially at that position, you know, there's plenty of guys in the NFL who've been kind of wild card personalities who bring a lot of value. That's just something, you know, that's a huge need for teams. I wouldn't be surprised if he went in the first round. I also wouldn't be surprised if there are a few teams who said, you know what, we're going to pass on him just because we have some character concerns with him. But I think, again, if it's the maturity piece, you hope that he can, you know, work through some of that, because he is a really, really good football player and he's exceptionally talented. And you saw the way he ran. I mean, that's still pretty rare to see a guy running in a mid 4.4s at 6.5 plus, and, you know, with some really good film on top of it.
So, Bruce, where do you come down on the Travis Hunter debate in terms of which position he'll be best at in the NFL? And in terms of receiver, how do you view this receiving class as a whole?
Yeah, I think he will end up being a longer term, a defensive back and a corner, because from the people I talk to who like him a lot, they think he can be a great corner or a really good receiver. And it's just harder to find great corners. And he came across great in the meetings with teams that I talked to. They really, really liked him. I mean, I have a story in the piece on The Athletic, just of an anecdote of what he told one of the coaching staffs. I mean, they came away, they went in really liking him, and they loved him after that. The receiver class is not great like it was last year. I mean, you had obviously four big time receivers, the two LSU guys. You certainly had Marvin Harrison Jr. and Roma Dunze last year. I think Tedderone McMillan from Arizona has exceptional ball skills. He's 6'4 plus. He did not come across great in the meetings of the coaches I talked to. They were just kind of underwhelmed by him and kind of his vibe. But I don't think there were character concerns. They just didn't kind of love how he came across. But his film is really good. you know, there's questions about his speed. He's probably never going to run. He told some NFL teams he's not running at the combine. I don't think he's going to run in his pro day. So people are sitting there going, is he a 4.55 guy? Is he a 4.7 guy? He's probably in the maybe low 4.6s, but he has spectacular ability to make contested catches and make big plays. So I think on, you know, from a talent standpoint, he's number one. A guy who helped himself probably as much as anybody overall in the, you know, in Indy was Matthew Golden. He ran blazing fast at sub 4.3. He is probably the best route runner in this draft. And he has really good ball skills too. He's just not very big, but I think he is a solid first round guy. After that, I mean, I think there's plenty of guys who are like, okay, we think he could make, you know, be a strong contributor. But in terms of like the Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas, Marvin Harrison Jr., obviously Ladd McConkey had a fantastic, you know, first rookie year last year for the Chargers. I mean, I think last year was a deeper group of really good receivers, but you know, start with what you got from the big receiver from Arizona. I think he will be the guy who would probably be the first receiver taken, but I don't think this is what we had last year.
Yeah, and of course there was someone you talked to who was upset that Golden ran so well. Like, I was hoping he'd stay under the radar, but obviously that's not happening. So one of my favorite things Bruce does every year is the freaks list. And you knew that South Carolina safety Nick Emmanuori was probably going to just do some ridiculous stuff, which he absolutely did. How good of a player? He ran a 4.38 with a 43 vertical. How good of a player do you think he can be in the NFL?
I think he's outstanding. I mean, this is a guy who's a former three-star. He's 6'3", 220. That's great size. I mean, his 40 time was really good. And as somebody told me like a week or so before the combine that they were training, you know, one of the receiver coaches was training guys with Emmanuori. And he was like, he ran 4.35 last week. He's going to run great. I knew the jump numbers were going to be insane because, like you said, I had him in the freaks list last year. He was 11.6 in the broad jump, which is kind of mind blowing, the 43-inch vertical. But the other number that I think just kind of wows folks is he was tied for the fastest 10-yard split in Indy, 1.49, the fastest of anybody. And again, he's a big, big athlete. From the time he got to South Carolina, he made a lot of plays. One of the coaches I talked to, who's a DB coach in the NFL, he said he thought he was probably a late first, top of the second round guy going in. And this is a guy I know pretty well. And he kept on, you know, we kind of had back and forth about him. I'd be really stunned if he's still around in the second round, because I think he... All the stuff we had talked about on the freaks list with Emmanuori, and I feel like he's a guy, you know, Joe, you obviously in prime SEC country and everything, like, I think it's surprising for an SEC guy to kind of come under the radar. I was just kind of like would shrug my shoulders that more people weren't getting it about him until Indy. And now I think everybody knows. I don't, you know, there are Derwin James comparisons, you know, as a box safety. I think he's probably even more than that. And obviously Derwin James had a ton of hype, you know, and buzz around him. I don't know if he's got as much range as Kyle Hamilton with the Ravens, who's, you know, even taller, runs great like Emmanuori. I mean, again, one of the coaches I talked to who's a DB coach was like, because I brought up Kyle Hamilton, he goes, I don't know if I'd go there yet. But I think he's the guy that it seems like more and more people are falling in love with.
Well, Bruce, really good information. Appreciate so much you taking time to be with us this morning, and we'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. Bruce Feldman from The Athletic, our guest here on Robbie and Rexroad. We'll react to what Bruce had to say coming up next. Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan tonight for Vanderbilt men's basketball. Commodores taking on Arkansas at Memorial Gym. 9 o'clock tip-off, late night. Pre-game show starting at 8:30. Coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Appreciate Bruce Feldman for being with us in the last segment. Joe, interesting stuff on the James Pierce front. I mean, apparently there's just some heavy concerns on James Pierce and the character issues that are continuing to come out. And as we talked about before Bruce came on, enough to get him completely out of the first round of Dane Brugler's mock draft there. Did we lose Joe?
I mean, that was a bit of an eye popper. What? You got me?
You're back.
Hello, hello?
Yep, you're
hello?
All good.
Sorry. Yeah, that was a bit of an eye popper. You know, even like Bruce saying basically that what he wrote was putting it mildly. And again, it goes with, I said it earlier in the show, but there's been some reporting along the lines of, this is what I believe happened, okay? And I think that this gets into a really interesting topic. I've always been fascinated by this topic, which is college coaching staffs and the level of honesty that they deliver to NFL staffs when they ask them about players. Because there have been, I know, talked to people in the past where it's like, some programs are known for, yeah, they fluff all their guys and they just sort of say, hey, great, because they want their guys to be drafted high and they would never, you know, they want to be loyal and they don't want to say anything to them. Well, but the thing is, you know, there's also a reason to be honest with NFL people, you know. And so, different programs have different reputations, different coaches within programs too, right? Like sometimes you may just have a real frank talker who's like, yeah, actually I didn't like this kid that much. But it seems to me that Pierce was hard to deal with last year. So again, it's better than like, you know, better than
some criminal problem off the field,
yeah,
or something. Yeah,
exactly. Some criminal problem, something like that. But, that seems to be, I mean, clearly, well, I shouldn't say clearly, but it seems that this is information teams are getting from Tennessee. I mean, that's where you're going to, it's very important to these pro teams that they have people on these in these college programs that will tell them the real deal. Give me the real deal with this kid, okay? And it sounds like some people gave the real deal on Pierce and it was not great. And it was, you know, he said maturity, but I mean, character concern, that's a significant, you know, that's a significant phrase, character concern. So,
you know what's going to happen to him, right? He's going to make it all the way to the end of the first round, and he's going to get drafted by the Philadelphia Eagles, and he's going to have 11 sacks his rookie year in Philadelphia.
Good God. Seriously. Or the Chiefs will get him.
Remember when all the stuff with Jalen Carter, and then the minute Philadelphia drafted Jalen Carter, I was like, oh, God, no. And here he is, just blowing everything up out there.
Yes, Chiefs or Eagles will get him at the end of the first round. He'll be a star immediately. I mean, he's a first-round talent. And, again, you know, we're talking about a guy who was talking about his number one pick. Of course, so was Will Levis. But first-round talent, so how much does it actually hurt him, you know? It's going to be – so I imagine there'll probably be more talk about this because it's a really – because you're right. This is exactly how sometimes teams that shouldn't be able to get a player like that do.
Going to be very –
of course it would be.
Welcome to Philadelphia, James. Hope you have a good time. That does it for
it's
us today.
It's the all-SEC defense.
It is. That does it for us today here on the program. Chasing Big Joe up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game.